Hey there, super friends. Welcome to Single Player, the actual play podcast, where I may be alone, so why don't you come up sometime and see me? You know, just not during a global pandemic. I'm your host, game master, and player, Kevin Gallagher. And this is, I guess, the first official episode of Single Player, so if you're unfamiliar with me, I am a dad and a pop culture nerd. I've hosted podcasts in the past. Most recently, you may know me from Everything is Awesome. That is kind of in limbo right now. It's an interview podcast where I sit around with people and chat with them. New co-host every week is how I kind of always painted that podcast. And we talk to interesting people about awesome things. You may have also heard me if you're, you know, catching me because this is a actual play podcast. You may have also heard me on Pot of Love, was my most recent appearance in the actual play TTRPG space. I played Discovery of Witches, I believe it was called, from Chris Bissett, a solo role-playing game for their Halloween episode. You've also may have heard me on Party of One. I've been on that show three times, maybe four, twice for Doctor Who role-playing game, and once for Dungeon Crawl at the Philadelphia Podcast Festival. And I think that's it. So it's probably only three. And then if you've listened to Everything is Awesome, we've also played a few games, mainly Mission Accomplished, also a game designed by Jeff Stormer, who hosts Party of One podcast. So that's maybe where you know me from, or you're just joining us for the first time, and that's okay too. Single Player is influenced by podcasts like Party of One, All My Fantasy Children, and One Shot. While a big chunk of what I want to do with this show is to examine the solo role-playing game experience with different games and exercises, I also want those stories to help build a larger universe that I've created. Geminis is a galaxy filled with several planets that orbit dual stars. I've created this universe for a book, hopefully several of them I'm working on, and those stories will most certainly involve space travel. And while I'm not ruling out space exploration in single player, I've selected a single planet that will be the primary focus of our world building and storytelling, Ecliptus. Ecliptus was once thought to simply be the moon to Tarvos, though the citizens of Ecliptus thought Tarvos was their moon. And is home to various races and creatures. Who are they? What are their stories? Each game or exercise we play in single player will answer these questions and more as we build the story of Ecliptus. In this first season, we'll be mainly using games that are available either as free downloads or pay what you want. Why? Another part of single player is to showcase the ease and accessibility of playing games when you can't get the whole group together. Also, this is my first time jumping into an actual play production. So this first season will consist of roughly 14 or 15 episodes. I think we've added one, 13 regular episodes, and this year session zero. As of now, I plan on releasing single player every other week, but I'm open to including some more fun bonus episodes from time to time. While you're listening to this episode on a Sunday, our normal release schedule, starting with episode one, will be on Thursdays every other week. Now, with all that out of the way, let's throw it to me in the future. Jeff, I changed it. You can't be mad at me. And play this week's game, Session Zero, World Building Edition by Megan Cross. Session Zero World Building Edition is a deck-based world building game designed by Megan Cross. You can use a standard deck of cards, or the deck of Session Zero world-building cards to draw a hand and answer the prompts. In doing so, you'll create a new world setting or expand upon one already existing. You can find this game at meganlinftw.itch.io and follow Megan on Twitter at meganlinftw. All links are in the show notes. I'm using a standard deck of cards Joker's removed today. To start, I've already separated them into four piles by suit. And then from there, I'll draw five cards with at least one from each suit. I'm going to roll a die to randomly select that fifth card. And we're going to flip these cards one at a time and answering the prompts to create a little bit of Ecliptus here. The info about the suits, as we go through the cards, you're going to hear me talk about hearts, diamonds, spades, and clubs, of course. Hearts are the suit of landscapes and physical features. Diamonds are the suit of world locations. Diamonds are also the suit of local locations. Spades are the suit of notable figures, and clubs are the suit of life and love. Since diamonds cover two sets of prompts, I'll answer both prompts accordingly with that single card. All right, so now that we got that out of the way, the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to roll that die to figure out which pile we're going to choose the second card from. So that's one. So we're going to choose one, two, three, four, and go back to one. And I'm going to just kind of shuffle these five cards up so that they are not in any kind of particular order, which kind of defeats the purpose of why I preset the stuff up so that you don't hear as many pages flipping. But all right, our first card is Heart, Eight of Hearts. And as I said before, the heart is the suit of landscapes and physical features. So with an Eight of Hearts, we have an ancient abandoned keep. Why is it abandoned? What condition is it in? What tales do people tell of it? So here's what I'm imagining. And I should note that I do have a couple resources with me to help with random stuff if I need to. Books by Madeline Hale, Table Fables 1 and 2, and her big book of like random items and artifacts and stuff. I don't know that I'm actually going to be using those today, but I keep those on hand with all my games just in case. So this keep here, abandoned keep on Ecliptus here. I believe that this keep was abandoned from the old world. So Ecliptus obviously has a lot of history here, being that it is one of several planets in a galaxy filled with life. Depending on when we're telling a story here, it's going to be far, far off into the future of Ecliptus. And of course, there's going to be abandoned things. And this keep, I believe, is going to be even in the stories that we tell here on single player, this keep is going to be abandoned. So this comes from before space exploration. Which means it's before the Treaty of Tarvos, which is something that I've already done some legwork on, which is like our year zero moment where a new calendar starts. Space travel has already been a thing for a little while, but all the planets at that point have come together to ensure peace throughout the galaxy and set up some sort of official governance of the galaxy, the Galactic Commonwealth, if you will. So this keep has been abandoned since before then, since before any life outside of Ecliptus came to Ecliptus, before anyone left Ecliptus to explore the space out there. So this keep is an old royal family of Ecliptus that died out, and when they died out, no one took over for that area of Ecliptus. Everyone decided to move away. I'm not quite sure why yet, but that land was abandoned, therefore when the family died out, maybe here it is, the people of that area, the land that was under the control of this family, they left because they were tired. And I'm thinking that maybe like this isn't like a huge area that was being governed by this family. I'm thinking it's not a king. It's not a it's not any anyone of super high power that can control the entire country or continent, but it's this little village. Maybe, you know, you're talking maybe 50 to 100 people that lived in this village. And maybe this family was just, you know, greedy and overtaxed more than they were supposed to from the ruling king or queen. And whatever it was, their governance led the people to not revolt, because they weren't looking for war. They weren't looking to upheave the order and put someone new in place. It was a relatively small village, and yes, it's not easy to move an entire village and find new work and stuff like that, but but these people banded together, and they decided to just leave and find or build a new place. Maybe there was a neighboring village not too far away that, you know, these villages, they didn't, if they have any kind of, like, I don't want to say military presence, but military, like, any kind of presence that could offer a huge defense or a huge offensive in war, they don't have it. These villages had probably one representative that, like, kind of was like a town watch type deal. I think they kept a lot of things in-house in these villages, at least in the early days. And while the king and the ruling people of and kingdoms of these countries had their own army to protect the country, including these villages, they passed through these villages, but they never really, you know, they didn't occupy. I like to believe that they, at least in the time frame that I'm thinking of, the ruling kings and queens were most, for the most part, they were friendly, right? They weren't oppressive. They weren't dominating their strength by forcing military into towns and stuff. So they would come through, pass by to just check in on, make sure everything's good. Other than that, you know, there was a lot of representatives that would come to these villages, you know, to collect taxes or whatever. But this particular village and this particular family was being overtaxed by this family. And we do need a name. We need a name for this family. So we're going to, I'm going to pull up Table Fables here. Table Fables 1 by Madeline Hill. And somewhere in here, there is a way to get names. Here we go. Names. They're first names, I believe. So not surnames, but we can make that work. So, and of course, it's a D100 that you would normally roll, which I don't have in front of me. So I need to remember that for future games. I need to keep more dice in front of me. So we're just going to roll a 1D6. That will pick the column, and then I'll roll another 1d6, and that will kind of pick at least from the first section. So let's see, we got a 6, so that's going to pull from the third column, and let's just, and that's a 2, so we'll pick, let's see, there's 25 in there or something like that, so we'll just do, we'll say 7. 7 down. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The Rubin family. So the Rubin family controlled this village, and their citizens just banded together, joined together, and instead of bringing war, they left. They just left. Went to a neighboring village that welcomed them with open arms, and that left the Rubin family by themselves in their keep. And they just eventually died out. And no one came to reclaim this keep. And I think that because this was a smaller village, obviously, I think that the houses, as time went on, eventually just kind of crumbled. They probably were like made of material that wouldn't last very long, just enough to get through winters and cold harsh weather. And then every like spring and summer, they spent time rebuilding. Now, the keeps, on the other hand, they were probably made of long lasting, durable stone and brick and stuff like that. So I think as time went on, the village kind of just disappeared from time. That probably only took a handful of years for there to be no sign of the village left, because this family wasn't keeping that up at all. So that village probably disappeared before this family died out. And then the Reuben family, when they died out, the keep then started to kind of, you know, deteriorate here and there. But for the most part, I think it's like, I mean, obviously, probably by the time you get to the Treaty of Tarvos, it's been probably a few hundred, if not thousands, thousand years. It's probably in some sort of state of decay by that point. But I think even then, like, it could be restored. And I think eventually, maybe like in the far off future, maybe it does get restored as some sort of historical site. But it is in a little decayed, and I think like in the early days, as people would like pass through this once a time a village, as people would pass through this village that once existed, they'd see this keep and they'd wonder about it, and every now and then, like as they were talking about it, maybe they passed someone else coming from the opposite direction who was originally from that town, or like their ancestors from originally that town. And they just would tell stories of, well, this village and it was great, blah, 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 blah. But like the Reuben family, they were just awful. And the story of the Reubens, eventually it went away. That story eventually went away because while they were not great people, I mean, at the end of the day, they didn't cause any wars or anything. So they become pretty forgetful. But the story of the keep, that I think as the Reubens become forgetful, I believe that kids, it becomes a place that, much like things that get abandoned in our world, it becomes a place where like teenagers go to hang out. And I think it's, maybe a little graffitied up, but it's not graffitied up in, like, a disrespectful type of way. Like, I think the graffiti that these kids leave tell a story. And I think that as maybe the world of Ecliptus grows and advances, maybe eventually these kids stop going there because there's, you know, more things to do than go hang out at an abandoned keep. So I think eventually these pictures that kind of tell stories, and they're probably, you know, whatever kids want to tell, you know, oh, here's a story of a monster, or here's a story of a ghost. I think that when this keep is explored, when we get to, you know, a further future, and it's more of a historical site and it's being explored and examined, and I really don't think there's much of the Reuben's story left, but it's these pictures that were drawn on these walls that are obviously like a lot more advanced than what we'd see in cave drawings, but for lack of a better term, that's the equivalent here, is like, oh, these are like ancient stories, and was this keep run down through with a monster? Was there some sort of monster that came through this village? And because I think there is still signs of it being a village, you know, while the houses may not be there, and it's very scarce, like it is just a keep, I think there are some sort of signs that there was once a village, whether it be like books that are in the keep that weren't destroyed, or just like little things that just show evidence of life outside the keep. And and I think that's the story, is like the story that comes from this is that some sort of monster came through the village, and that's why there is no more village, that's why there is no more keep, and that's why it was abandoned. And I think eventually, maybe in like the far, far off future, maybe they restore it for some sort of historical benefit. And it's like, hey, this is to remember this town that was destroyed by, and maybe this is like one of the first cryptoids that Ecliptus ever kind of hears about. And it was destroyed by this monster. And I think, man, that's a seed that I would love to explore in a future episode when we like to develop a cryptoid. This is the moment right here. Okay, so I think that's our abandoned keep. I think we answered all the questions. Yeah, so let's move on to the Eight of Clubs. The Eight of Clubs. Let me just turn to my page there. Clubs, as a reminder, is the suit of life and love. So we're looking at the Eight of Clubs, and that's travel. What is the most common form of travel? Is it accessible to everyone? Is it the most efficient mode of travel? And oh boy, this is a big question, because when we're thinking of Ecliptus, there's, you know, I'm not telling linear stories here, right? So the mode of travel is going to change over time. And obviously, like in the world of the novels, the most common form of travel is going to probably be, I mean, I guess not necessarily space travel, because that's just the galaxy's most common form, but it'll be some sort of like speeder or car or motorized form of travel. What is the most common form of travel on Ecliptus? I think that it's always going to be some sort of vehicle, right? and it's always just advancing from that point. So let's stick with like the time frame of pre-Treaty of Tarvos, because that's where I see a lot of these stories stemming from. If I'm going to stick to Ecliptus, every now and then I think we're going to go and tell a story in space. Since I plan on focusing so much on Ecliptus and so much on the early days of that world and pre-space travel, let's focus there. And I think the most common form of travel is going to be like a somewhere between like motorized. Like car, like a car, but doesn't run on, I don't want it to run on fossil fuel. I want it to be like clean energy. And I think like it all, I mean, of course it all stems from like a horse and buggy, right? Like that's where a lot of a travel, like that kind of thing start, like travel by horse. Eventually you build a box, put wheels on it, and that lugs you around. And then eventually you motorize that, right? So I think that the most common, you know what, it's still that, but it's going to be public transit. Public transit is, I think, big in Ecliptus. I think public transit it's so big because maybe there was a period of time where they had to use some sort of fossil fuel, but they very early on realized how bad for the environment that was, right? So they developed a way to run and see, technology has to advance to the point where they're able to have some sort of clean energy but not be space traveling, right? So I think what it is, here it is, we're in fantasy space, right? So in Ecliptus there's this mineral, this ore, not coal, but like some sort of other metal that there is a refining process, but it's very simple and basic that I don't know science, so I can't get into that, but the way it refines doesn't harm the environment, or at least not as much as fossil fuel kind of creation does and the use of. And so what it does is it acts as like a battery almost, right? It's something that goes into where an engine would go, and it helps. And I'm sure there's some sort of engine that runs these, you know, these motorized vehicles, but it's this mineral that once it's, and it's not, you don't, it's something like almost like a diamond ring, right? Like you don't consume diamond rings. You get one and it's probably the only one you're going to have for your life. So it's something like that where like, oh, you get this and you add it to your vehicle. And it keeps it moving. And there is, I think it does require, it's kind of like solar power, right? Like it needs to be hit by the sun to regenerate, but it's not like direct sunlight that it needs 24/7. You can take it out or pop the hood or whatever. And it charges, you know, in a couple hours, kind of like plugging up a Tesla or something. And then you're good for like a week or two. Like it's just, it's superpower. So I think that it's there's individual vehicles that do this. But I think that because early on they recognized the dangers of fossil fuels, they moved to like a public transit type system. So, and I think the most popular version of that is going to be like their equivalent of a bus, right? Because trains kind of take you further distances and they exist, and they certainly are used to get from like bigger from one town or village or city to the next. But within each little town or village or city or whatever, it's mainly buses. And then maybe like a village of 100 people, there's like one bus that kind of helps get people from here to there. And then some of the more prominent people in that village may have their own vehicle, but I think that's very limited. And then like in a town of a couple thousand, you're gonna have a couple, you know, you're gonna have a few buses that run. And then in a city, you're gonna have a couple hundred buses, right? I think it is accessible to everyone. Like it's, you know what, they don't charge for it, right? Like, so the way that, this works is that, it is accessible to everybody and they run purely on a donation program. So like you can donate, whether it is, oh, I'm going to donate some money as I get on the bus, or I'm going to, you know, once a year, I'm going to send some money or gold or whatever the money system is here in Ecliptus. You know, we're going to send that off once a year or a few times a year just to help them keep them afloat. So I think this is like a nonprofit organization that exists to help everybody. And I don't think like even the people who have their own vehicles, they don't look down at that or anything. Like there's no one that really looks down on that. Maybe there's a handful. I mean, obviously you can't have a world of perfect people. So obviously there's probably like a world of, there's a handful of people that might be like snobby people that look down on it. But for the most part, it's accessible to everybody. Everybody accepts it. Everybody helps keep this thing moving. Because the only cost is upkeep on these vehicles. I think that mineral or that element or whatever, that keeps this thing going is like almost a one and done. Like maybe you have to replace it when you get a new vehicle, but for the most part, like you throw that into that bus and that bus lasts for 30 years, that mineral is going to last for 30 years. As long as there's, you know, oh, and you know what makes this, it only works because there's a dual sun, you know, and while like no one there would know, because there's no way to really, you know, test anything with only a singular sun, maybe in the far off future, like there's technology that will allow you to test, oh, what happens like if we only had one sun. But this ore only works the way it does because it's got the energy from two different suns, that are powering it. And because of that, you know, there's very like the only cost to this public transportation is paying their employees a fair wage and the upkeep of these vehicles. So I think that like, it's a very, like, it's not like an expensive thing to have going in these villages and these towns and these cities. And I think like for some of it, it might just be completely funded by the local government. I think in other places it might be fully funded by like donations and stuff, but it's a nonprofit organization. And I think there's obviously like offshoots of it that like, you know, like anything, like that are going to either try to make a profit or try to do something. But the public transportation aspect of it is accessible to everybody. And it is it the most efficient? I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily the most efficient mode of travel. I guess it depends on where you're going. I think for what people are using it for, it's the most efficient. The only thing that would be more efficient would, I guess, be, something bigger, right? Something bigger, but local. But when you're getting into something bigger and the next thing up from a bus type situation, I think would be a train, right? So like, is that, I think a train moving you from within a hundred person town or village, I don't think that's efficient, not as efficient as a bus. And so, maybe like the only thing that would be more efficient is in bigger cities, like a subway. That would be more efficient than the bus. And I think like all their public transportation runs on this element that is clean energy. It's basically like a solar powered battery, right? So, and I think it works a little bit differently in the subway because, you know, subway's underground, so they have to be able to swap out that mineral or something to recharge it. But I think for the most part, like the bus system, 90% of the time, that's going to be the most efficient versus anything else, because we're talking local travel here, right? So, all right, let's flip another card here and see what we have. We have the Four of Spades, and spades, as a reminder, are notable figures. So we have Four of Spades, a despised leader. Okay, where and who did they lead? What about them made them despised? What became of them? Okay, I think we can kind of loop that into our first card, and this is the Rubens, I think it's going to be the last ruler, right? The last like ruler that came through and started to be greedy, right? So let's first of all, let's roll on pronouns. That's a two, so he, him. And let's get a first name for this guy. Same thing. Let's figure out what column we're going to pick from the first column. And we're going to pick near the bottom here. Elwin Rubin was the last person in charge of that village, of the Rubin. Let's see, where and who did they lead? So they it was a village called I wonder if there's got to be a name creator for a country in here. Maybe let's look at Table Fables 2 and see if there's something, because I'm terrible at creating names. That's why I like random tables a lot. All right, 77. Let's see if the town generator will help us with names here. Perfect. Okay. And again, I don't have the proper dice with me, so we're going to have to kind of modify this. But let's do, okay, that's Bison County. Okay, so Elwin Rubin of Bison County here, he was the last kind of ruler before the villagers kind of banded together. So he was the leader of this town, the ruler. Ooh, okay. So there's a distinction between ruler and leader, huh? Okay. He led the finances, of Bison County, right? Elwin. He wasn't, a military leader. He was more of a political financial leader. and he led, I mean, he didn't lead the anyone really. He enforced a lot of that rule, and he would be the guy that goes around to collect. And I think that like maybe like his father was actually like the mayor or whatever. And his father was sick, and his father was beloved. Like the Reuben family was actually a beloved family until Elwin, right? And Elwin, he, as his father got sicker, he's like, well, you know, maybe he was next in line and he's just starting enacting these things ahead of time. And it got so bad that even before his father passed, the town banded together, and his father was too sick to do anything. Like I don't think he knew. Oh man, that's so sad. What's heartbreaking is like his dad had no clue that this was going on. Had no clue that the town eventually abandoned, or that the townsfolk eventually abandoned Bison County. And he died just thinking that everything was fine. And you know what? Maybe that's good. Maybe that's actually, there's some beauty to that, because like he didn't need to know what a scumbag his son became. And he died thinking that Bison County was going to continue on its way and become a prosperous village for his citizens. And I think, you know what? I think that, his father, whose name is, let's pop open that book again. I think his father, whose name is, oh God, I can't read that far away. His father, who is Cornelius, I think is remembered. I think there are stories about him that are remembered, but he's like the last Reuben to be remembered, he's like that's why that they keep the keep is and make it a historical place, is because while the Reuben family for the most part died out, Cornelius is remembered for being a benevolent leader, and a benevolent ruler to Bison County. But his son, Elwin, he's forgotten. Maybe there's some other, ancestors of Cornelius that are remembered. But he's the guy, because he's like he's the last one on record as ruling, Bison County. But Elwin Reuben, he's long forgotten. He becomes not even a footnote, because no one cared to remember him, because he was not a good person. Okay, so Two of Hearts. We're going back to Two of Hearts here, and Two of Hearts is going to be a mighty mountain range. Is it widely explored and charted? Does anyone live within the mountains? What is the climate like throughout that range? A mountain range, is it widely explored and charted? I mean, I think, yes, eventually it is. I think like most of Ecliptus, it eventually is. In the time frame that we're talking the story about, I think it's explored, but I don't know if it's like widely explored. Like there is, people hike it, and climb it and go on adventures throughout that mountain range, which we of course need a name for. So let's see if we can use our book here to, you know what, let's put this mountain range right in Bison County, like, or it starts in Bison County. And I know, like, I think that I think Bison County eventually expands, right, to include more than that town. That town was Bison County, but I think eventually, like, as time goes on and the Reuben family is all but forgotten except for Cornelius, I think the boundary lines of that expand to and as rule and governance changes, Bison County becomes like a pretty big land that has several towns and cities in it, and it's also like where most people believe that the Bison Range starts. So this mountain range is Bison Range, And like that area of it is super wide. It's like everyone knows, like that's super popular, super explored, and charted, like in that, I don't know, couple hundred square mile, radius. Like, whew, yeah, it's like also like a super vacation-y area as well. But I think that mountain range runs across the whole coast. Not that there's necessarily a coast there, but you know, it runs along for the entire country. Like, it's huge. It's so big. And I don't think in the time frames that we've been talking about here, that it's super explored beyond Bison County. I think that Bison Range goes through so far south and north, and it's not widely explored. I do think that there are people there that live within that range too. I think there are, Ecliptus is like home to a lot of different races and stuff, but primarily, I think like the ones that come to mind are humans, dwarves, elves, and like a mixture of those races. And I think that, you know, I think the go-to response would be dwarves that live here, right? But no, it's, I think there's like a tribe of elves that live, somewhere like way south of Bison County, in the mountain range. And they are like an elf tribe that, is very hairy, like you typically would imagine a dwarf, right? Because I think they live in the peaks of these mountains, where it's super cold. There's like a constant snow almost. So they wear a lot of fur coats. They have bushy beards, long hair, and as we talk about the climate, I think the higher these mountains go, the colder it is, the more snow there is, the more wintry it's like. I think as, you know, in like, let's say in Bison County, there are areas like that, like especially like the taller mountains in this mountain range. But there are also areas that are like just like fully green, like just lush and green and beautiful, rolling hills, and sunny, and you know, obviously with that comes rain. I think it has like all the weather, like, you know, depending on what the weather is around that area of the Bison Range, it depends on the weather where that is. Unless you get to the top, like I said, the top is going to be snow. It's going to be cold almost all the time. Rarely does it get super warm, and that's where those elves live. Welcome to the Midroll, Super Friends. What this section of the show is going to be used for, typically is for thanking Patreon supporters, maybe thanking some advertisers, maybe thanking some special people who helped with a particular episode or whatever. We're also going to do updates about the show, especially since in the future we're going to be recording shows months before the release, so there might be something that's important, whether it's related to the project that we're featuring on the show, whether it be about the show itself, so forth and so on. You know, the intro to the show is the first thing I record before I even play, and then we play the game. So there's a lot of moving parts that happen. So the mid-roll, you guys should be used to it by now. You hear all the shows do it. A lot of them use it for commercials. We may or may not. I'm toying with the idea of doing sponsored reads. You'll hear that in the very beginning of the show. Within the first 10 minutes of these shows, you may hear a commercial break dropped in here and there throughout these episodes. I'm toying with it. We've never done it before. I'm toying with it. And give me your feedback. Let me know what you think about it. But that's all. I wanted to update you about that, and what this purpose of the mid-roll is for, if you're not used to mid-rolls. Very specifically for this episode, you are either about to hear or you just heard like a moment where I may have been a little bit flustered, and that's because I had an interruption while I was recording the episode. And then at that point, I had like a hard out that I had to finish recording this episode at. So I kind of rushed through the end, the last two prompts, two or three prompts here. But listening back during the edit, it doesn't, you only know because I told you. I could have kept that secret, but hey, I'm going to pull the curtain back for you guys, man. I'm going to show you how the spaghetti is made, baby. But that's why I had a little interruption. And when I got back to my recording setup, I just had to remember where I had left off, because I hit pause instead of hitting stop. So I could re-listen to it. Though it sounds like it pretty much flows all together pretty well. I just wanted to put that out there and let you know, exactly what was going on. That's what we do here at Single Player. All right, I'm going to throw it back to me to wrap up this game here. Session Zero by Megan Cross. What a great game. Loved this game. Before I actually throw it back to me, that's something that I don't think I effectively captured when I was ending the show, because I was thinking about, oh, I got to end this show soon. So I didn't really, really focus on how much I loved playing Session Zero. I want to introduce it to my groups that I play with, and say, yo, here's some world building stuff. Megan has a character creation session zero, that is very similar prompt based to help flesh out these characters. It's a really cool session. You don't have to go through a whole lot of prompts to get a whole, I feel like I got a ton of content out of this game, to help flesh out Ecliptus in Geminis here. I feel like I know a lot more about Ecliptus, about some of its history, about some of the things that we're actually going to be focusing on in this season here. So I was really, really happy with Megan Cross's Session Zero. Incredible game. I honestly was thinking about finding new Session Zero tools for each new season. And season two is going to be a little bit different, but for season three, I'm either going to go back to this, or I'm going to take a look at their character creation version of Session Zero and maybe pull that in. I'm not 100% sure because that's so far away, but this game will become a regular feature on Single Player as we kick off new seasons, I think, or variations of Megan Cross's game here. So thank you to Megan Cross for making this game. It's such a good game. I implore you to check out the show notes and click the links and give her a follow, and please download. Get this game, buy this game, throw money at it. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful game. All right, let's get back to Session Zero, World Building Edition. All right, I'm not 100% sure how this is going to cut back, because I was interrupted by dogs, which you may have heard. I'm not sure, but we're going to go to our last card, and that is the King of Diamonds, as we move away from the Bison range. So that's going to be Diamonds is locations, both world and local. So for the world location, the location of the King of Diamonds is going to be the location of a great battle. What battle was fought there? How long ago was it fought? What scars is the battle left? Okay, so I think Ecliptus there was a great war. And I think that's what it's actually called, the Great War. And it was long ago. And it was when humans actually first stepped foot on Ecliptus. I believe that, for the most part, that world for the longest time was dwarves and elves. And I believe humans, wherever they came from, no one really knows. Like, they just kind of showed up. Maybe they were like a secluded, they lived in a secluded area, and they eventually started to explore, much like the dwarves and the elves did. And while it was just an area that hasn't been explored by anyone yet, and they got out to the world first. And I think that there was mutual fear between humans and elves and the dwarves. And while the elves and the dwarves coexisted, I think what happened is that I think the way the story goes is that the dwarves believe the elves acted first, the elves believe the dwarves acted first, but there was some sort of fear that led to a fear between the three majority races of Ecliptus at that point. Like, I think there are other races, especially as space exploration becomes more rampant, that, like, it's just, you know, you name some sort of species or race, and that they are on Ecliptus. But this time, like, the three prominent, I think there are also, and I don't have names for them yet, but I think there's also, like, the equivalent of all your classic fantasy races are going to be there, like orcs and trolls and stuff, gnolls. There's also, I think, like, other more kind of, I think there's, like, there are some, like, lizard-type people that live on Ecliptus, even during this time. Again, they're probably not, like, out in the open all that wild all that often during the early days, but as time goes on, like, it becomes like a melting pot, if you will, of species and alien races and stuff. But I think there is this mutual fear that the humans had of the dwarves and of the elves, and I think there was, you know, a fear that they also had of the humans, that then became of each other for whatever reason. Maybe, you know, one of them acted and they just acted because they thought the other ones acted. And that act was, it was so big that it caused fear between these three, groups of people. And it led to this huge war that I think the humans obviously lost because they were still small in numbers at that time. And I don't think they lost, like, in a way where, like, they were wiped out or anything like that. Like, they waved the white flag first. And I think, in doing so, I think that, like, that opened up the eyes of everyone, that was part of that war. And this is going to go back, I think, to, I mean, if we're looking at, I think this goes back to, like, if we look at the Treaty of Tarvos as year, is, I mean, technically year one, but as our epoch moment, I mean, we're 100,000 years easy, I think, is how far back this goes. It's probably an area of time that we probably won't touch on much at all in this show or in any of my writing, though. Maybe in my writing a little bit, because that sounds like an interesting story to get to. But and I think that there's just this scar of, like, shame. It's not physical scars. Battle was so long ago that there's been the world has been cleaned up since then. But I think that, and while things get lost to history, this is something that doesn't. This is something that does not get lost to history, and it is something that is taught to all the children of all the schools, and it's universal. It's not like, you know, where we learn one thing about World War II and another country learns something else about World War II. This is a universal thing that is taught about the Great War. And the scar is the shame that everyone still lives with to this day, you know, the shame of, like, I can't believe that my people would fear your people, or that we would do this to your people, or that, like, this is something that we all have to live with as a people. You know, no matter, like, we will have conflict. There will be conflict between us again. There has been conflict since then. There will be again. But that conflict is just the conflict of nature, of our, I don't want to, you know, of the Ecliptus nature, of there being sentient beings that share this world, whether it's humans sharing it with one another, whether it's dwarves sharing it with one another. You know, those conflicts are going to happen within communities that are small and wide. but we will always remember the shame of the fear that led us to that great war. And I think that when it comes to the, when it comes to Ecliptus and when it comes to wars, I'm sure there have been wars since the Great War, and there will be wars in the future as well. It never stems from fear. It never stems from the unknown. It stems from probably more political reasons, maybe some you know, I think a lot of it's, we don't know. I don't know how I want war to work in this galaxy, because I'm not really there yet, and I'm not in that mindset. So while there's conflict, and that conflict will exist, always exist, the scar is that shame that they all, like, there's a remembrance day where it's like no one does anything except they go to like locations that have been set up to, you know, pay homage to the past. And I think there's parties on that day where, you know, it's like, yes, we should be ashamed of the fear we had, but let's not fear each other ever again. We have not feared each other since the end of that great war, and we will never fear each other again. And it's just people getting together and remembering, crying, laughing, and just making sure that for all future generations, that there will never be a war based on fear again. And then when we look at our local locations for King, a lush park. What is its most distinguishing feature? What grows there? What is concealed within its boundaries, huh? Okay, a lush park, huh? So I think this is, and this is going to be, we're going to stick with Bison County here. This is going to be the Bison County Park. That is, I think like at the foot of the Bison Range, right? And it is, I think its most distinguishing feature is that it leads to like the main, main entrance to a mountain range sounds weird, but it leads like the main official entrance to the mountain range, right? And they make a whole to-da about that, where the park is filled with like statues of people who have climbed the mountain range, heroes who have entered the mountain range to save. A person who was kidnapped, or to go after a known monster in there, or something along those lines. There's those statues that lie in the park. So it's the distinguishing feature is all about the mountain range and the entrance to it and the history of it. I think what grows there in this park, there's an area that's like, it's fenced off because it's not for the public at all. And I think that area is, that area grows, okay. That area, while it's part of the park, that area is part of the mountain range where that element is found. That element that once refined is what powers their public transportation. So grow is probably the wrong word. I don't think it grows. I think it's just part of the mountain range there. And they have, it's part of the park because, like, you know, the park, it's an area with trees and blah, blah, blah. And it's just part of the park, but they have that area kind of fenced off because they don't want people, because I think there is a wrong way to gather that element, and there's a wrong way to refine that element. So they don't want just anyone getting to it. And I think there are like, maybe, like there's probably like a, like a park ranger or something to that effect that like quote unquote guards it. But, and I don't think it's ever really a problem. I think it's mainly like maybe kids try to get into that secluded area to drink or make out or whatever kids do, you know? But that's what's like, that's the thing that it's, that's there is that element, that, that is used for, clean energy transportation. What is concealed within its boundaries that someone doesn't know? Oh, I know. I know. There is a known, and again, we talked about the cryptoid earlier, right? So the cryptoid that went through the keep that, that, long rumored to destroy that village and that, and that, and that the original Bison County, basically. Well, it is a story that was told through drawings and stuff. I think that the cryptoid is real. And while I think that like the people that know about it, like they want to protect this cryptoid because the cryptoid is just, they're just trying to live their life. And like they have their own family, right? Because, you know, we think of cryptoids as like this singular being, like the Jersey Devil or something like that. And maybe that's the case. Maybe this cryptoid is a singular being. But I think that they do have a family, whether that's like, you know, maybe that their family is like, oh, like I have this, this nest of birds that I take, like that I help take care of. Like his family doesn't necessarily mean like it's a whole family of cryptoids. Maybe it does. I don't know yet, but that's what is concealed. I think there is a section of this mountain range that like the cryptoid calls home, and there's only a few people that know about it. So it's not like so obviously blocked off, but it's, with the, like, I think the cryptoid probably has some sort of like, way to communicate. Like, I don't know that it necessarily communicates, fully with everyone, but I think that, it can communicate and it works with the people that know of its existence to create a, to create some sort of like natural concealment. Because if people knew that this thing existed, that that could lead to not necessarily war, but that could lead to a hunt. It could lead to like, oh, we want to capture it for scientific experiments. So I think it's that cryptoid, which we'll learn about at some point, I swear, that cryptoid is what's concealed within the Bison County Park, which includes part of the mountain range, right? So that's what's secluded there. And oh, God, man, this is such a good game. This rocked. Session Zero here, I've never played the original Session Zero, which I believe is based for character creation, but this world building edition is awesome. And we created a lot of story about Ecliptus. I love it. We created so much. I love Bison County. I really love the fact that I got this cryptoid out there that I need to develop more of. I really love that I got this element that is clean energy that I need to explore more of. Oh man, what a great game. And this is a game that you can obviously play with a group of people as well. And you can, you know, we spent just probably about an hour, a little under an hour playing this game with five cards. Your session zero, you know, it could be a 4-hour session building, just world building for the night. With just these simple prompts, man, what an awesome game. That's it for single player this week, but we'll be back on Thursday with Jeff Stormer's Anyone Can Wear the Mask. As a reminder, you can find links in the show notes to pick up Session Zero World Building at meganlinftw.itch.io, and you can also follow Megan on Twitter at meganlinftw. While you're on Twitter, be sure to give the show a follow at singleplayerrpg for my solo role-playing game and tabletop role-playing game specific tweets, and for more of my randomness, you can follow me at thatnerdykev. If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a 5-star rating and review on your podcast app of choice. Podchaser and Apple Podcasts are the ones that I see directly, so that would be I love seeing that. It makes me happy because while those numbers help the show grow, I just like to feel good, guys. Make me feel good. You can support the show financially at patreon.com/thatnerdykev or on ko-fi.com/thatnerdykev. Single Player is a Shades of Awesome Entertainment production and is edited by Kevin Gallagher. Our intro music comes from the song Hit It and Crit by Thundering Asteroids and is used under a Creative Commons license. The Single Player logo is by Marjorie Gallery and modified by Kevin Gallagher. If you'd like to inquire about advertising rates, featuring your game on the show, or about press coverage of the show, send an email to singleplayer@crudehumorstudios.com. Before I hit the stop button, I want you to remember one very simple thing. You matter. You matter, and you make someone's life better for simply existing. I know this because you're listening to this show, and that means the world to me. Thank you. Until next time, super friends.
Hit me four times. Now crit it.